Hey there, listeners. Every Sunday through the midterm elections in November, my friend from the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom, Bridget Bergen, will be hosting a call-in show that explores the power dynamics of New York's political landscape. And every Sunday, you can hear the podcast of that show here. So now, this week's edition of The People's Guide to Power.
This is The People's Guide to Power. I'm your host, Bridget Bergen, a senior reporter in the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom. This is our new midterm election series that brings people with power together with those who seek it, the journalists that cover it, and you. On today's show, we're talking about the power of parents and the many different ways those parents are organizing and voting because of their kids. And speaking of, that's Rafi making his radio debut. He's 6 months old and lives in Brooklyn. I talked to his mom about this, but
he's saying hi.
We're going to come back to that. When it comes to candidates, we're hearing a lot from Republicans this cycle about the issue of parents' rights. This is an ad from Congressmember Lee Zeldin back in the spring. He's now the Republican Party's candidate for New York governor.
I'm highly suspicious of those in government who say that parents shouldn't be more involved in their kids' education. Trying to talk these great parents from showing up to be involved in curriculum, being involved in their kids' education, because you know what? A parent has a fundamental right to control the upbringing of their child, and they do not relinquish that right because they send their kids off to school. We are
going to take that pitch that parents should be dictating what's taught in schools is not new. Historian Edward Larson points to how William Jennings Bryan railed against teaching evolution in the 1920s, using an argument for, quote, parental control to cloak the religious fervor that was really driving him. Jennings Bryan went on to successfully prosecute John Scopes, a Tennessee high school teacher, in the infamous Scopes monkey trial. We have seen many versions of the parent power argument play out from both the left and the right ever since. Remember in the 1980s? There was the fight for labels on music to warn parents about explicit lyrics, a memorable battle in the culture wars of the day. Here's Tipper Gore, when she was still the senator's wife, testifying before Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are asking the recording industry to voluntarily assist parents who are concerned by placing a warning label on music products inappropriate for younger children due to explicit sexual or violent lyrics.
In this latest iteration, supercharged by nearly 3 years of the COVID pandemic, complete with school closures and new roles for parents as teachers and remote learning coordinators, a new round of culture wars over race and gender identity, the parental control argument has resonated with varying degrees of success. Last year, parental control of the curriculum was a winning issue for Republican Glenn Youngkin, who ousted Democrat Terry McAuliffe as governor of Virginia. Youngkin is now targeting trans student rights. In New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy, a Democrat, narrowly beat back a challenge from a Republican, Jack Cittarelli, who drummed up controversy making false claims about the state's sex education curriculum. Murphy won, but it was closer than expected. When we asked for your calls ahead of this show, Sina from here in New York said this.
I, as a parent, absolutely will either vote or not vote for a legislature, depending on their views on the COVID mandates, on CRT, LGBTQ, lockdowns, any and all of those.
Her whole message was about 3 minutes long, and she really makes clear. She does not want vaccine mandates. She blames lockdowns for learning loss and stunting kids' social and emotional development. And she opposes CRT, or critical race theory, which has really become the catch-all term for any time students are taught about racism and its legacy in this country. But this notion that parent power is only coming out of these culture war issues, and specifically from the right, is something that really bothers Kaniella Ng.
There are parents organizing in schools across the nation that we never hear from in the media. Brown parents, Black parents, poor parents, Native parents. And they're concerned about other things.
He runs a national organization, Families for a Future, that puts parents on the front line in the fight over climate change. And this summer, they were among the protesters outside White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain's house in Maryland, demanding the federal government declare a climate emergency.
It's one thing to be scared about your kid learning that it's okay to be gay, or the truth about like contraceptives and safe sex. But there are other parents that are worried about their kids dying from heat stroke in their classrooms. Like that same urge, that fierce love for your kids, that you'll do anything to protect them. Where is that when it comes to pollution and the climate crisis?
And this brings me back to Rafi's mom. Liat Olenek is from Brooklyn, a public school teacher on parental leave. She talks more about the world her child will inherit.
This cycle, you know, I'm focused especially on the climate crisis and having a world that we and our kids can survive in. And then also thinking about a thriving democracy with everything that entails, including...
She says parents do bring something extra to these policy debates.
The thing is that parents are powerful because there's this moral authority that comes with saying this is about my child and, you know, what's best for them, especially, I think, when it's about their survival.
That's a sentiment that Sina from New York would likely agree with, even if their politics are different.
Never, ever, ever stand between a mother and her child because you will lose.
So parents have power. And candidates and other institutional actors know this. How they choose to use that power can play a decisive role in elections, and those elections will determine who is in charge of passing the laws that will govern little Rafi's and all of our lives, now and in the future. One race where parents are poised to play a major role this November is in New Jersey's 7th Congressional Contest. It's a purple district that picked up thousands more Republican voters after redistricting. It's located in the southern portion of northern New Jersey and includes all of Hunterdon and Warren counties, along with parts of Sussex, Somerset, Morris, and Union. It's rather sprawling, stretching as far east as Linden and Rahway, and as far west as Harmony and Holland. Oh, and there's a little town called Bedminster, where a certain former president likes to golf in summer, right in the middle. The current incumbent is Congressmember Tom Malinowski, a Democrat. Congressmember, welcome to the People's Guide to Power in WNYC.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And listeners, just a heads up, due to scheduling, we interviewed the Congressmember before the show was live, so we won't be able to take your calls during this segment, but we want to hear your reactions, and most importantly, we want to know how your role as a parent is affecting how you vote, and we're going to get to that right after this conversation. Congressmember, you are running against Republican Tom Kaine Jr., son of a former governor and a former minority leader of the New Jersey State Senate. I will note he declined our invitation to join the show today. You narrowly defeated him 2 years ago, but let's start with this issue of sexual education in the classroom. New Jersey adopted new standards that are being implemented for the first time this year. What kind of input do you think parents should have on this issue?
I think parents should have input on every aspect of their kids' educations. And ever since I've been in this office since 2018, I've been talking to parents, to teachers, to students. I do assemblies and meetings at high schools all the time. And I get a range of concerns from folks about our schools. The number one concern, probably going back to when I first started running for office, was safety. I meet a lot more parents who want to protect their kids from guns than parents who want to protect their kids from books. And that's still an important issue. And, you know, this year we actually passed the first gun violence prevention bill Congress has adopted in over three decades. Since COVID, I hear a lot, very understandably, about the time that our students lost when education was hybrid or at home. That's a very, very serious problem. Our kids are dealing with a lot of mental health issues. The lack of mental health resources for kids comes up a lot. And then there's this this newer issue that has kind of come to our state from other states, where parent groups and political movements have tried to rile up a lot of fear about what our kids are allegedly being taught in class. So we're seeing that play out in school board elections in New Jersey and in our campaign.
It was also a topic of a recent Rutgers Eagleton poll that found most New Jerseyans do favor sexual education in high school and middle school, but just about 46% approve it in elementary school. This is really a state issue. We're talking about state standards, and you are running for federal office. Can you talk more about why this has become an issue in your race?
My opponent, who you mentioned, Tom Kane Jr., has jumped on this bandwagon of bringing the culture wars to New Jersey. He went on Fox News a few months ago and accused elementary school teachers in his hometown, actually, of Westfield, New Jersey, of teaching pornography to second graders. It's obviously not true. It's nothing to do with the state education, sex education guidelines. And, you know, just think about what a horrible thing that is to falsely accuse an elementary school teacher of. But I think the political purpose of this is just to stoke fear and anger and then to try to use it to win elections. I mean, if I'm a parent and I hear a politician tell me that teachers are sexually grooming my second grade teacher, I'm going to be pretty upset about that and pretty concerned, right? And it just happens to be not true. And that's what has really upset me. We need to be recruiting more teachers to teach our kids. That's a big, big problem right now. We have a teacher shortage in New Jersey and all across the country. And, you know, recruiting teachers into a situation where politicians are going to accuse them of horrific things like that is even harder.
Let's talk for a moment more about the district itself. Because of redistricting, you now represent parts of the state that you never did before, and you picked up more Republicans. Democrats control the redistricting process in New Jersey. So how did that happen to you?
It's actually a bipartisan process in New Jersey. So there are Democratic redistricting commissions, Republican commissioners, and then a nonpartisan judge who makes the final decision. And how it all happens tends to be a mystery to all of us. But I've got a very competitive district. It's still roughly equally divided between Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and probably the one race in New Jersey that everybody's going to be watching this year.
So how are you going to try to appeal to those moderate and independent voters?
Well, I'm getting them. I'm winning independent voters in the polls. I have Republican elected officials crossing the aisle to endorse me. I'm the nominee of the Democratic Party, but also of a new party called the Moderate Party in New Jersey that was formed by current and former Republicans who, you know, may not agree with me on everything, but they don't support the MAGA wing that's taking over their party either. And so I'm running by building an alliance among moderates of both parties.
So can you talk a little bit about, so the moderate party would be, you know, a product of this issue with fusion voting, which I know was subject to a lawsuit. It was it's been banned in New Jersey, wouldn't allow someone to be running on a major party line and a third party line. Where is that now?
The lawsuit is proceeding, but not fast enough to enable me to be on two party lines this November. But the party itself, which again was started by local Republicans in my district, will be campaigning for me and making the case that moderate voters should be voting for me this year as the Democratic candidate. And then next time, hopefully, and I'm pretty confident the lawsuit will ultimately succeed, next time they'll have the opportunity to do so under a party line that reflects their values and sends a message to both parties that we need responsible, pragmatic governance from the center and avoid the extremes.
Congressmember, you were recently listed in the New York Times as one of the 97 members of Congress and the Senate who traded stock in a company that had business before the committee you served on. You sit on the Transportation Committee and shorted stock in Carnival, Ferrari, and Tesla. Can you talk about what happened there?
I had my retirement savings invested in the stock market when I was elected to Congress, as a lot of people do. invested by an investment firm that I had no personal involvement in. I have since placed my life savings in a blind trust. I think I'm one of only about five members of Congress that has done that, that has a fully qualified blind trust where I have no idea how my savings are invested. I've sponsored legislation that would require every member of Congress to have a blind trust if they have any investments in the stock market. And I'm hopeful that we're going to pass that before the end of the year.
I've read some reports that that legislation could pass as soon as this week. What can
Correct.
You tell us
yes.
about that?
We're going to try to do that, yes. There is a version of that legislation that combines a lot of good ideas from different bills that will be put before us. And, you know, fingers crossed, we'll be able, in the House at least, to get that done this week.
And you support that bill as well?
Absolutely, very strongly.
Congressman,
and I already abide by it. So it's...
There you go. So, Congressmember, our focus today is the power of parents. So, you know, in our final few minutes, what is your pitch to voters and particularly parents about why you want to stay in Congress to represent them? What's at stake and why you?
What's at stake is whether we have a government in Washington that focuses on the everyday issues that the voters in New Jersey care about. Cost of living, keeping the price of health care down, lowering the cost of prescription drugs for our seniors, which we just did, passing legislation that will finally allow Medicare to negotiate the price of prescription drugs down for our seniors. Protecting our democracy, making sure that we remain a country where we have differences, but we settle those differences by voting and not by violence, like some people tried to do on January 6th. Protecting the environment, fighting climate change for our kids so that they have a planet where they can breathe the air and we can have an economy where America, not our adversaries around the world, are leading the world to the technologies of the future. That's what we've been doing. We've been delivering for New Jersey based on those principles. And the alternative is politics of division and anger and I think increasingly extremism. The Republican Party is not what it was 10 or 20 years ago. It's been taken over by this extreme MAGA wing that is banning books, banning abortion across the country. And doing more to divide us than to deliver for us. So very clear choice. And our race in the 7th District is one of the few in the country that could go either way. And so it's very important for the direction of the country as a whole.
We're going to have to leave it there for now. Thank you so much to Congressmember Tom Malinowski.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The People's Guide to Power, our new midterm election pop-up show. Thanks for joining us here in week three of our 10-week run. I'm Bridget Bergen. Today, we are talking about the power of parents and how that role may influence the issues you care about and how you vote. I'm joined now by WNYC's senior reporter for New Jersey, Nancy Solomon, host of a must-listen podcast, Dead End, a New Jersey political murder mystery. Also, Rima Amin, a reporter covering New York City schools for Chalkbeat, an education news website. Welcome to the People's Guide to Power to you both.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you for having us.
And listeners, especially parents, we want to hear from you. Are you voting in New Jersey's 7th Congressional District? How are you making your choice? Or if you're here in this city, how has your role as a parent influenced how you vote here? Or are you on the PTA, and is that how you use your power? Or are you a parent who is frustrated by what feels like an imbalance of power and resources? And will that change how you vote in this election or future ones? We want to hear from all of you. Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also tweet at WNYC. Nancy, let's jump in to that interview with Congressman Malinowski. You've been covering this race. You know, he made the case that he will be able to appeal to those moderate voters. What have you been hearing from voters on the ground there?
Right. I mean, I think it's not clear. I mean, you know, so let's go back to 2020, I guess, is the best place to start. So 2 years ago, Tom Kane Jr. ran against Tom Malinowski, who was in his first reelection bid. So he had taken office in 2018 during what was a blue wave across the whole country in response to Donald Trump, and was a really massive blue wave in New Jersey. They all but one of the Republican Congress members lost their seats that year. And Tom Malinowski beat a very, up till that point, popular moderate Republican, Leonard Lance, in 2018. Mm-hmm. So along comes 2020. Tom Kane Jr., famous son of a very popular Republican governor, also a member of the state Senate, well known in that district, lives in Westfield, runs against Tom Malinowski, and comes really, really close. He comes within a percentage point. I think it was 0.8 tenths of a percentage point, about amounting to 5,000 votes in a district that has 730,000 people. Wow. So a very, very close race. And now what we're seeing is, and you just spoke with the congressman about redistricting, which is really the critical thing going on in this particular race. You know, it was already a purple district. Mm-hmm. It was already, a tight battle that was going to be a tight battle every 2 years for that seat because of what a purple district it is. And the New Jersey State Democrats, who were on the redistricting commission, basically made Tom Malinowski the sacrificial lamb. And they shored up the other Democratic congresspeople. Their districts got registered Democrats from Malinowski's district. And they gave Malinowski an extra 30,000 registered Republicans. And was it necessary? It's not clear to me that the Democrats who benefited from the new redistricting maps really needed the help. I think you Malinowski had the tightest race in 2020 in the state. And he's the one who, I guess they thought, he can't hold that district, so we're going to let it go, and we're going to give it to, we're going to shore up everyone on his borders.
Wow.
And so he's facing a real hard slog, and, and it really is going to come down to, do moderate voters trust Tom Kane Jr. to be a moderate Republican? I don't think there are enough Trump MAGA conservatives in that district to give him a victory. It really depends on whether he's able to sell himself to moderates. And he already has a leg up in that department just by virtue of his name.
So, Nancy, Kane does not seem to be talking to the press much. I noted that we did invite him to join the show today, and he declined our invitation. But do you know if he is making this debate over the sex education standards an issue when he talks to voters and how they're responding to it?
Yes, absolutely he is. And I think one indication of that is the fact that the only public event open to voters, not something that is like a closed appearance that he makes with very little notice to the public in front of like a Rotary Club or something, which as a reporter, it's frustrating. It's impossible to cover because you don't know where he's going to be, and he'll show up and so he's campaigning, but he's campaigning without any kind of and there are no reporters who are able to follow him and cover him as yet. We're all putting in our requests. But the one event that was on the website that you could register to attend, now you had to make a donation to attend it, but it was about parent choice. And I think really if the gubernatorial election in New Jersey is really the guide for why this is the issue that Tom Kane Jr. has picked to appeal to voters, Jack Cittarelli, and I think you mentioned this in your open, Jack Cittarelli, the Republican candidate, came much closer to the incumbent governor, Phil Murphy, in the 2021 reelection race than was expected. And the most kind of juice he got out on the campaign trail was about sex education. He would paint it as a much more radical thing than what is actually in force. You know, there are changes, but, you know, he would say, oh, you know, kindergartners are being taught about sex, which isn't true. They're being taught about the word gender and that there are girls and there are boys and what that means. You know, so it's there, you know, so that really inflamed people. We know it's a wedge issue all across the country. And so I think Tom Kaine is using it as sort of like a message to voters, like, this is who I am. You know, it's not like Congress is going to get involved in the sex ed curriculum in New Jersey. So
let's hear from a parent in New Jersey, Yarrow from Union, New Jersey. Welcome to WNYC and the People's Guide to Power.
Hi. Yeah. So I'm the parent of two, and I've been keeping an eye on what was happening in Congress with Build Back Better, and completely horrified and depressed that we weren't able to advance, you know, investments in affordable child care and pre-K. And then, of course, paid family leave is one of the only countries in the world without a program. It's just shocking to me that we can't do that. And I actually looked up Tom Kaine's voting record when he was here in New Jersey and saw that he actually didn't support the passage of the state program on paid leave. And I just think, like, we have to really be thoughtful about those issues, kind of, I think, of basic issues for all parents. As you become a parent, having access to paid leave and affordable child care, we have to fight for those issues really, really hard.
And so, Yara, these other issues, so, you know, as opposed to the conversation about sex education standards, you are identifying another set of issues that are really influencing your vote as a parent, and, you know, a need for a paid family leave program sounds like it tops that list.
Yeah, and it's actually completely up to Congress, right? Some of the issues that you're talking about today are kind of like, you know, state level issues. And so we have to, like, understand what is actually, like, at stake when we're talking about electing Congress people as well. And I think, like, we definitely have to educate ourselves on those issues. And, like, we have to keep, like, looking at who we're electing and what can happen if we elect a Republican like Kaine. I mean, we could be even decades more out from passing a national paid leave program, which is such an embarrassment.
Yara, thank you so much for calling WNYC. Please call us again. Rima, I want to bring you into this conversation. Your focus is the city schools, and there are so many differences in terms of how our city schools are run with mayoral control. You know, can you touch on how the fights over curriculum are different here?
Sure. Yeah. So it's so interesting to hear Nancy talking and then also see what's happening in more conservative leaning states, because you're not really seeing that conversation over, you know, the concept of, like, racial justice being taught in schools or, like, even sex education. I'm not saying it's not an issue here, but I just haven't really heard it come up much. More recently with curriculum in New York City, it's actually been recently focused on the administration curbing back a de Blasio era plan. So when the former mayor was still in office, he planned to use about $200 million in federal stimulus funds, which is a significant number, to create something called Mosaic, which was meant to be a math and reading curriculum that they called culturally responsive. And for, you know, listeners who don't really know what that means, it just means making sure the curriculum sort of represents the diversity of the classroom, you know, ensuring that more, you know, Black and brown voices are actually included in the curriculum. And it, you know, this is criticism of school curriculum that I think is nationwide and has been going on for a while. But we learned, I believe, last week that the city is actually not going through with that plan now under Adams, under Mayor Eric Adams. Instead, they are planning to create sort of, you know, social studies curriculums that focus on The voices of various students, you know, including like a Black Studies curriculum, and something that focuses on LGBTQ people, as well as in a pilot for an Asian American curriculum. But and you know, that in itself has drawn some backlash from organizations and advocacy groups that had really hoped for the de Blasio plan to go through, especially because under him, which is pretty novel, it would have been novel for the city school system, they would have mandated that schools have to use that curriculum, which is not something that actually happens right now. So that invited a little pushback. And I should say there was also a little pushback to the de Blasio plan from particularly from an organization called PLACE, which formed to keep admission screens in place for middle and high schools. And for those who are not familiar with New York City system, you do have to apply to get into middle and public middle and high schools here in New York City. And that group had said sort of this idea about including diverse voices in the curriculum, you know, was sort of this catch-all term that didn't really say much about what the quality of this new curriculum would be. But it's not really happening in that form anymore. So that's sort of what I would say that is most of the conversation on the ground here. Mm-hmm. And probably should mention that the Adams administration has really focused from pretty much day one on introducing more phonics-based curriculum in schools, as well as literacy. But that I think that's a bit different from what we're talking about.
It's The People's Guide to Power, a new call-in politics show on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, your host, and I'm speaking with WNYC's Nancy Solomon and Rima Amin from Chalkbeat, and you, our listeners. And I want to go to Marcia in Glen Garden, New Jersey. Marcia, welcome to WNYC and The People's Guide to Power.
Thank you for taking my call. I was saying that I am a Republican. I voted for Governor Kaine and I voted for Governor Whitman, and I'm in Tom Milinowski's district, and there's no way I would vote for his son. I just think he's way off the beaten path, and I worry. I mean, we have excellent schools in Hunterdon County, and our teachers are amazing, and the idea that he can lie about them and malign them, and the fact that, you know, I want my kids to learn about LGBTQ communities so they can respect them and accept them. And I think kids are resilient that way. I don't want books banned. And whatever so-called morality that will come from my teachings at home, but I want my school to be able to diversify everything. So the idea of Tom Kaine, a junior winning in my district, but I strongly feel that there's enough of us moderate Republicans in the county that we can hopefully, you know, help him win the district.
Marcia, thank you so much for calling us. Please call us again. And Nancy, that is, I think, perhaps the exact kind of voter that Congressmember Malinowski is relying on in you know, making this really tough race a winnable one. Are you hearing voters like that who identify themselves as moderate Republicans kind of echoing anything that we heard from Marcia there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strong strain that runs right across New Jersey. The tradition of, you know, Lincoln Republicanism, very moderate, dating back to the days when there just wasn't even that much difference between Democrats and Republicans. It's kind of hard to imagine now, and remember back to those days. But, you know, but I would say, I mean, I'm very curious about Glen Gardner, New Jersey, and what Marcy is hearing from other people. You know, there are, as you go in Tom Malinowski's district west out into the more rural reaches of the county, you know, it does get more conservative. And so I think that's a challenge for him. And I also, you know, I wonder how much people really know about this race, because, you know, New Jersey has become a bona fide news desert. I mean, there just is not, the news coverage, the newspapers, we don't have much in the way of TV coverage. It's all on the decline.
Mm-hmm.
And how much, you know, for someone who's paying attention, okay, they're going to see exactly who these two candidates are and they're going to be able to make their choice. But for people who either vote on the Republican brand or they vote because it's a familiar name to them, I just worry that people don't have enough information about the differences between these two candidates. So I think that becomes a real problem when you've got a guy who has got the name of his father, who is really known, like really well known as a moderate Republican. And Tom Kaine's voting record in the state Senate is not a moderate record.
Right.
And, you know, Tom Malinowski keeps making the point over and over when he goes out and speaks to voters that Tom Kaine Jr. voted against the abortion rights bill that was a response to the Supreme Court on his last day in the Senate. He's now left his seat to run for this congressional seat. Mm-hmm. But that was the last vote on his last day, or he voted on it on his last day.
Mm-hmm.
So, the right to an abortion is a pretty widely accepted thing in New Jersey. It's even, among moderate Republicans as well as Democrats. And so, you know, but to what extent do people really know that? I don't know.
Rima, one of the major storylines in the city schools has been how parents are fighting back against more than $300 million in cuts to public schools. Parents recently sued the city. Tell us where that fight is now, and then we're going to talk to actually one of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit.
Yeah, so talk about parent power. This budget lawsuit was filed by, as you said, two parents and then two New York City teachers, and it argued essentially that there was a procedural error in how the education portion of the city's budget was passed. But really, you know, it seems like the goal is for them to make sure that these cuts don't go through, which have affected about 3/4 of all city schools. And so initially they won the lawsuit and the judge ordered the city to consider redoing the education portion of the city's budget. And in the meantime, revert to higher funding levels from last year, which is like about $1 billion more than what Wow. the education department is getting this year. Yes, that's largely driven by federal stimulus dollars, but it's still a huge amount of money. But then the city filed an appeal, and an appeals court granted, a stay on the original judge's order, which essentially just means that these cuts can go through right now as the appeals process plays out. And this week, the appeals court will hear the case. So we should have an update, I believe, on, I'm not sure if it'll be the final resolution or what, but it is going to be an important hearing.
Well, thank you for the update. And I want to go to Paul in Richmond Hill, Queens. Paul, I understand that you have a direct connection to this lawsuit. You're one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, I am on the lawsuit as both a parent and as a teacher who has been affected by the budget cuts.
In this decision to sue, the city schools, you know, talk about a way to use the power of parents and teachers. Is this sort of a message? Is this a way to say, you know, parents need a stronger voice in how some of these decisions were made? And did you feel like parents were not in the loop when these budget decisions were arrived at, you know, back in June when they negotiated this deal?
I feel like the school community is at large, being parents and teachers and administrators, were blindsided by this. I mean, I was, as a teacher, I was asked to order new equipment. I'm a music teacher, so I was in the process of ordering and starting a new drum curriculum that I was excited to do. So, you know, and that was with my administrator's blessing. So, yeah, we were all really blindsided by this, and the parents were as well. And when it looked like that things were going dark with the budget cuts, needing to cut programs, we were, as a school community, internally trying to figure out, what could be done and advocate for our school before we let the parents know, because we knew that they had no clue. Yeah. So as far as parents empowerment and voice in the process? Absolutely. It should not be. They should not be the last to find out. They should be the first ones to be reached out to determine, you know, what happens with their school community.
And Paul, I mean, part of what we're talking about in today's show is how the power of parents then translates to your vote. And certainly these city officials are not on the ballot in November. The next time we'll be voting on any of these city council members is next June in those primary elections. Mm-hmm. But are you thinking about that as you are thinking about who represents you? Is this an issue that will inform how you make up your mind when you go to vote next year?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm an advocate in many areas as well. I've been involved with the recent decision, you know, in the debates regarding the Rockaway Beach branch that the mayor announced, you know, the park only plan, because it directly affects my neighborhood. And my local schools, my girls lost their music program, which is, you know, very distressing as a music teacher myself, as that's what inspired me on my career path, my music teachers in elementary school. I've been reaching out to council members and I've been talking to them, getting their feedback, and some supported the budget passing and some did not. And yes, I think ultimately votes should be determined, you know, by what is your representative doing for you or not doing for you in some cases. And so that needs to be factored into it. And, you know, and there also needs to be some degree of compartmentalizing. You know, you may agree with the lawmaker and what in the path they've taken regarding one thing, but maybe not in another.
Paul, thank you so much for calling. I think you're going to have a busy week. I'm sure there'll be news coming out of whatever happens in that hearing on Thursday. But thank you so much for calling the People's Guide to Power. Let's go to Kamala in Brooklyn. Welcome to WNYC, Kamala.
Hi.
And go ahead.
Oh, well, just, you know, I called in response to that prompt, if as a parent that affects who you vote for. And for me, absolutely. And I am very concerned about several issues that I think affect our schooling, budgeting, the outsized place of high stakes testing, segregation in our schools, all of those things. And I really support the last caller, except for I disagree with one thing, which is that I don't feel it was totally blindsiding, because I think the Adams administration is one that's, you know, has been heavily funded by charter school backers and is, you know, pro-privatization. So I'm not totally surprised about trying to starve the schools. But I also said to the screener that I'm glad you're talking about parent power, not just in the way that it seems to be spoken about lately, which is this AstroTurf, not true grassroots movement of right-wing parents who are like screaming at school boards who are funded by big pots of dark money. Hmm. And the fact is that many of us from a progressive standpoint have been advocating for our schools for years. And for a larger voice, like in New York City, it could not be more stark that parents do not have power, because we don't even have an elected school board with mayoral control. So that's mostly what I wanted to say.
Kamala, thank you so much for calling and for offering your perspective on how parent power is influencing your vote. I want to read a couple of the tweets that we got in response to our prompt as well. Ellen O'Shea McHugh tweeted, "I am more driven by the gaps in programs and opportunities for kids with disabilities, especially after Banks' nasty remarks about parents gaming the system. You don't say stuff like that out loud unless you mean it." Maria Danzillo tweeted, "As the mother of three, all of whom who suffered through, quote, Zoom school, I know firsthand that the fallout on kids was enormous. The failure of union leadership to prioritize children has been ruinous to education outcomes and mental health." And Jean, whose Twitter handle is Queen's Parents, tweeted, "We're all accustomed to some level of, quote, politics as usual from both parties. But what families and especially kids have been put through the past 2.5 years with COVID restrictions and education is unlike anything I've ever seen in my lifetime. Absolutely atrocious." Rima, I think those are probably sentiments that you have heard in conversations with parents throughout the past year. I'm wondering, do you feel like, you know, how much power do parents actually have in our city's schools? And does that really make a difference in terms of where you're living in the city when you answer that question in just about a minute?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, as you mentioned at the, you know, earlier, the city, there's a mayoral control system. So it's not like, as opposed to other school districts, parents can sort of, you know, vote with their feet, as they say, and, you know, either run for school board or elect a representative. So in that way, the mayor's office does have extraordinary power. But I do think that, you know, as far as like masking and COVID protocols, I think that there have been some very loud voices on the side of sort of shedding those mitigations. And that is what has happened with the, you know, the Adams administration has peeled back a lot of those mitigations, most recently pulled back a vaccine mandate for students playing sports. I think those parents have seen a friend in this administration. There are also many parents, though, who still want things like that implemented in the school system. And I think to answer your larger question, I think that while parents don't have direct power in how decisions get made in New York City public schools, they have various avenues to advocate. And you will see that, you know, this administration or past administrations will sometimes react to that if it's loud enough. but it's also based on who the administration is sort of choosing to listen to.
Mm. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. There's so much more that we could be talking about. But thank you to Nancy Solomon, WNYC's New Jersey senior reporter, and Rima Amin from Chalkbeat. If you want to go back and listen to any of the conversations you've heard today, you can find them at wnyc.org/guide to power. You can also hear our series in the podcast feed for The Brian Lehrer Show. Nancy, Rima, thank you so much.
And thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The People's Guide to Power is produced by me, Lisa Allison, and Zach Goddard-Cohen, with help from Kate Hines. Juliana Fonda is at the audio controls, and Megan Ryan is the head of live radio. I'm Bridget Bergen. Thanks for listening. Join us again next Sunday at noon and every Sunday through the elections in November for The People's Guide to Power.